Chapter 13. In view of the drastic turnabout in Aunt Lucy's world picture, Jack decided to confess to his father that he had been to the hospital. He had not, after all, been categorically forbidden to do so. He consulted his siblings first. "Are you sure?" Rosie asked incredulously. She actually said, "time?" "Several times," he assured her. She seemed to like saying it, and she even said she was glad she'd fallen over that sack of mushrooms. She said she would be grateful for all time. "Grateful?" interposed William quickly. This sounded promising. "Well, make sure you tell Father that." Jack, then, passed on to Mr. Bagthorpe the information about Great Aunt Lucy's conversion to time, along with the manual on goat-keeping. He was not comforted. "Here," he said, snatching the manual, "give me that. We have little time to tend Lucy's bees. We must get to immediate grips with the goat." This latter was an almost prophetic phrase, as it turned out. "But she really has changed, Father," Jack persisted. "She's gone all peaceful, and she's really grateful to us all, she says, and especially you for putting those mushrooms for her to trip over." "Look," said Mr. Bagthorpe, "do not waste your time describing how Lucy feels to me. I have known her since before you were born. Here today, gone tomorrow, every benighted bee in her bonnet spins round in circles at the speed of light. Peaceful, you say. If you visit her again, she will probably attack you with a poker." Jack pointed out that hospitals do not have pokers, but Mr. Bagthorpe dismissed this as a quibble. "Poker, hatchet, what's the difference? You are missing entirely the point I am making. The point I am making is that the day Lucy thinks the same way 2 days running will be the day pigs fly. Now get digging. And when I'm through with this book, you read it. When that goat gets here, it'll want milking. Fast." Grandma was equally dismissive about Aunt Lucy's personality change. "You do not surprise me in the least," she remarked when she was told of it. "Lucy has always struck me as quite unstable. I have always been profoundly grateful that she is no blood relation of mine." She looked pointedly at her son, who was a blood relation, and therefore, by inference, prey to the same instability. "I think Auntie Lucy's a silly old griffin anyway," piped up Daisy. "Of course she is, dear," her grandmother assured her. "That little child is more perceptive than any other single member of this household, including, I fear, yourself, Laura. Why do you not consult her about your problems? She could quite easily take on writing your column herself." "When that hell-raising infant is about," Mr. Bagthorpe said, before his wife had a chance to reply, "Laura is so beset left and right by her own problems that she rarely has time to tend to the others. She is herself, so far as we are concerned, a problem, with a capital P the size of purgatory. She is, to use the words of that half-baked theory of Tess's, a threat to survival, burying chops, biting people's legs, mixing seeds, dropping eggs." "I didn't," Daisy squeaked indignantly, interrupting this catalogue. "It's Arioch, I told you, didn't I, Rosie? He's a bad boy, and he mixes seeds and drops eggs. He dropped 6 eggs yesterday." "That," said Mr. Bagthorpe grimly, "is tantamount to a confession. Keep the score, Rosie, and I'll get the cash off Russell." "Daddy don't care," Daisy said, keeping her end up. "Daddy's got lots and lots of money." This tactless statement must have hit home hard. Mr. Bagthorpe, however, had only entered into the exchange with Daisy while temporarily off his guard, and now tightly compressed his lips and affected to read the cricket scores in his newspaper. This had to be affectation. Mr. Bagthorpe had only ever once attended a cricket match, and had hideously disgraced the whole family by triumphantly yelling, "How's that?" every time a batsman, on whichever side, scored a run. In the end, the umpire had come over and had a word with him. Mr. Bagthorpe had maintained that he thought this expression a cricketing variant of "hooray" or "huzzah." This happened to be true, though you could see the umpire did not believe him. When, several balls later, a batsman was given out leg before wicket, Mr. Bagthorpe had stood up and yelled, "Now who's shouting, how's that?" Soon after this, Mrs. Bagthorpe had claimed that she had a serious headache, and they left the ground. "There is more livestock arriving tomorrow, I understand," remarked Grandma, who did not like to see a state of simmer die down. "What's livestock, Grandma Bag?" asked Daisy, who had been told by her mother always to ask the meaning of words she did not understand. "It is any creature that is alive, Daisy," Grandma told her. "Everything that lives and moves and creeps upon the earth." "Is maggots livestock?" Daisy asked. "Naturally, dear," Grandma replied, "though I should prefer you not to dabble in these." She had herself been a victim of some of Daisy's previous maggots at the family reunion party, and her memories of this event were painful. "It's not me that wants maggots, Grandma Bag," Daisy said. "It's Arioch. He hadn't got no livestock, and he wants maggots." Nobody much liked the sound of this, but were not seriously perturbed, inasmuch as they imagined that Daisy would have no way of procuring such livestock single-handed. Her previous ones had been raised in the airing cupboard by William during the germ warfare on the Latter-day Saints. "I should rest content with little Tommy, dear," advised Grandma, who did not know this. "He is fast becoming a shining jewel of a cat, and requires your constant companionship. Why, dear, don't we now hold another funeral, and bury Arioch?" She had imagined this an inspired thought, and was not prepared for the violence of Daisy's reaction to it. "He ain't dead! He's not! He's not!" she squealed. "He's my bestest friend in the whole world, and he's not dead! And he hadn't got a wrinkly face and short legs. He's not never going to die, not till I do." Most present felt that the time for this double demise could not come soon enough. Grandma, however, alarmed by the strength of the passions she had aroused, immediately tried to modify her position. "Hush, dear," she told her protege. "You have quite misunderstood me. I was not for a moment suggesting that Arioch was dead. I merely thought that he might enjoy attending his own funeral." Daisy's sobs abated, and you could see that she was attracted by this novel proposition. "There are, after all," Grandma continued cunningly, "few people who can ever have done this. In fact, Arioch is the only person I have ever known who could attend his own funeral. It would be an historical occasion." At this, Mr. Bagthorpe made a strangled noise and left the room. "It's all hopeless," William said gloomily. "He doesn't even believe that Aunt Lucy talks about time all the time and is eternally grateful to us. Can't we get him to go and see for himself?" "I think that would be most unwise," his mother said hastily. "We must give him time. He must be allowed to work through this obsession with survival." The Bagthorpes sat morbidly contemplating this prospect, and at that moment there came the sound of grinding gravel that meant Uncle Parker had arrived. "It's Daddy! It's Daddy!" Daisy squealed. "He can come to Arioch's funeral as well. Everybody can," she added generously. "And even Uncle Bag, even if he is a nasty grook." Uncle Parker breezed in, accompanied by Celia, Aunt Celia. "Hello, all," he greeted them. "Still surviving, I see." "Only just," William told him. Aunt Celia passionately embraced Daisy, who, as usual, struggled to get free. "Listen, listen," she cried. "We're going to have a big funeral today, and it's going to be Arioch's, and Grandma Bag says it'll be hysterical." "By Jove!" Uncle Parker was clearly impressed. "Arioch, then, has finally kicked the bucket. I feared we should never see the day. Congratulations, Daisy. Or, rather, of course, condolences. Think, Laura. Henry and I will be able to reduce our insurance premiums, which were, one is bound to admit, becoming crippling." "No, no, no!" shrieked Daisy, infuriated that Arioch, just because he was going to have a funeral, should be presumed dead. "He's not dead! He's not!" "Really?" Uncle Parker was quite nonplussed. His daughter's intimations of mortality were apparently taking a devious turn. He was slightly shocked. "Are we going to bury him alive?" Obviously, he felt that even Arioch did not deserve this fate. "No!" squealed Daisy. "You're not listening! You tell him, Mummy! We're going to have a funeral for Arioch, and he's going to come to it!" Aunt Celia instantly renewed her attempts to embrace Daisy. Evidently, she alone perfectly understood the situation. "It is wonderful," she told everybody. "The symbolism of the ceremony is almost too deep for words. We are to witness the phoenix arising from the ashes!"